Ignition sequence start. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Liftoff.
Check, 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 check. I literally just create madness.
Boiler up.
I'm going to go off here.
They don't have a great quarterback.
I got to take a break. I'm getting in trouble.
To win the Big Ten, you first got to win the West.
Bad Bunny.
Have you heard his name in a while?
No.
Has it bothered you?
No.
Defensively, they got to come in with some confidence.
Is that even analytics?
I am in a parking garage. I'm kind of lost.
Terrence Shannon, Matthew Meyer, RJ Melendez, Coleman Hawkins.
These trophy presentations aren't over.
I didn't come here to go 5-7.
I'm so proud of Illinois football right now.
I'm so tired of Joel Embiid.
We're not taking Patrick Corbin.
I want to bet the Bears.
Oh.
You are Reba McEntire's niece.
Roshan Russell.
Coach Bielma.
You know, love.
Yeah, salute to yourself.
What?
We got all kinds of things for you here.
There's a lot of glass.
Oh.
Guys, we have breaking news.
Uh-oh.
It's the drive.
Schmack dogs.
Hey, what's up? It's The Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5, Derek Piper, Kyle Toss. Kyle is here.
Can we play the appropriate music?
I was going
to.
Hold on.
You're a little too cheery for me. You're not matching
my mood. Trying to have a good
Wednesday,
man. All right, Kyle's going to be a little surly today, and he deserves it. Look, I texted him this morning. You all know, I'm assuming, if you're a Cubs fan, you definitely know. If you're just a sports fan, you probably have caught it on SportsCenter or watching the game like I was last night, and man, the Cubs having a 6-0 lead and Seiya Suzuki dropping the ball. Anyways, we'll get more into that, but here's the deal. Here's what it boils down to. Kyle made a promise that instead of taking a personal day today, he would be here. And in return, I promised him that we would play this song over and over and over and over for at least the first hour, and we'll see where it goes. So here it is. That was tough to watch, Kyle. That was tough.
Can you just lose like a normal team? I mean, can we just go out there? Listen, I knew the Braves were the opponent. Just go out there and go down 8-0 and make me move on with my night.
Give up a couple of bombs in the first inning. Acuna hits a home run.
No shame in that. It's the Atlanta Braves. Don't lose in the most embarrassingly moronic fashion that you could possibly lose in on a fly ball hit right to you with two outs in the eighth inning after you lead 6-0 in the sixth inning. I mean, what are we doing here? That was maybe the most painful regular season loss that I've ever experienced as a Chicago Cubs fan.
It's hard to top that one, knowing the stakes. The fact you're up 6-0, you get a pretty decent start out of Justin Steele. Now, he did.
Ran out of gas in the sixth, though, which has been his MO here the last couple times out.
Yeah.
The bullpen's just a mess right now. You got two of your best relievers on the IL, another one in Mark Leiter, who is on the team, but David Ross won't put him in there because clearly he's hurt, but they don't want to overload the IL with their whole bullpen.
I was going to say, he's been pretty good this year.
He's been great, but the last couple times out, he hasn't looked himself, but Cubs have just been throwing relievers on the IL the last, like, 3 weeks. So I guess they decided we can't have another one on there. We got to just have an injured pitcher in our bullpen that's unusable.
That's tough. 6-0 going into the bottom of the six. PR hits a home run. You get Olsen, knocks one in. Azuna, who's had a just ridiculous second half. And all of a sudden, 6-3. Acuna hits a two-run bomb. In the seventh, that was off of Assad, I think.
Yep.
And then Smiley gets in some trouble there in the eighth inning, but it should have been, I mean, it was a fly ball to right field. Oh, yeah. Seiya Suzuki converges on it, and he just misses it. I know I was watching some of the post game, and he said that he saw it all the way, maybe until the end. I don't know if the lights were part of that. He kind of, I mean, maybe looked like that was the case, but it just...
There were 14 other fly balls hit to right in that game that everyone seemed to be able to catch. I mean, and again, it's... I'm not someone that's sitting here like, oh God, Seiya Suzuki is the most hated person in Chicago. What a loser for dropping that. Because at the end
he's
of the
been
day,
awesome.
He's been great the last 2 months. You had a 6-0 lead in which the tying run was on third in that spot that you blew. And David Ross is actively sabotaging the team late in the game when he's bunting twice. He put the bunt sign on twice against the Atlanta Braves in the last 3 innings of the game. Why are we handing the Atlanta Braves free outs? I've never been more frustrated than watching a team hand away outs. I can't stand bunts unless there's very specific occasions, like especially with the new extra inning rule where bunting is actually can add to your win probability. Not in the 7th and 8th inning of a 1-run game against the Atlanta Braves. Don't hand them a free out with a guy that's 3 for 3 in the game. And then the other thing I couldn't understand too is, we take out our best defensive player holding onto a 1-run lead in Atlanta with that big outfield out there. Pete Crow Armstrong, the only reason he's on the team is because he's an elite defensive center fielder. He gets taken out of the game in the 8th inning. Guess what? A ball gets hit into the right center gap. I'm not saying he for sure catches that, but the way that I've seen him play the outfield, he's calling Suzuki off there and making that catch in center.
It's a good call.
And he gets taken out because apparently a guy that's on the team for speed and defense shouldn't be in the game protecting a 1-run lead against that offense in David Ross's mind. So there was so many things that frustrated me. I'm not someone that's sitting here blaming everything on Suzuki. Bottom line is, let's make a routine catch if you're a major league right fielder in that spot. Absolutely. But he had a 2-run triple earlier in the game. He's been the best hitter on the team since the start of August. It's far from him. I mean, even Drew Smyly, to get to that point, walks 2 guys in the 8th. You can't be walking guys with a 1-run lead. Come in and throw strikes, or don't pitch. And that's kind of the state of the bullpen, too, the fact that Drew Smiley's pitching the 8th up 1. That shows you how depleted this bullpen is. So it's just, I mean, at this point, after last night, I mean, I don't know how you recover from that. At this point, I've made peace that this season is over, and I'm going to watch the Dolphins play on Sundays and be happy doing that, because I would be shocked if they can overcome that.
I appreciate the heck out of Kyle's edginess, out of just his anger. I think sometimes you get something to get really fired up about on the negative side, and it produces, let's be honest, good radio. I do feel for you and other Cubs fans out there that it did have to come at that expense. Now, it's not over yet. You got another game tonight. You got 5 games left. Let's hit up the
Jameson Taillon's pitching tonight. We are saved.
You want to inspire confidence, as we talked about yesterday, his road ERA, has not been very good. On the U of I Atlantic text line, Scott says that was a Bartman moment. You can call me Sal. Cubs inventing new ways to lose since forever. And a 651 says, Pipes, don't be so cruel. I'm not trying to be cruel, honestly.
No,
in all honesty,
you weren't
not
being cruel at all. I just came in. I'm in a bad mood after that, so I don't mean to bring the mood down of everybody else.
I did see on Twitter some Cubs people saying, don't let Seiya Suzuki overshadow David Ross's responsibility, not only last night, but just kind of in general,
totally,
the way this team has gone on a slide from secure postseason position to now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've been very against David Ross for a long time now, and I think he's lost the Cubs a lot of close games here. They've played in a lot of close games here in the last 2 months. They've lost. You look at their run differential, they're plus 100. That'd be the 5th highest run differential to miss the playoffs in MLB history.
Wow.
If you miss the playoffs with a plus 100 run differential, I'm not saying it's an exact correlation there, but you're losing on the margins. You're losing in these close environments with these slight decisions. That's what that tells me, and that points right back to the manager and the decisions that are being made here. And I just detailed, to bunt. I mean, you get the leadoff guy on trying to pad your lead against the Atlanta Braves offense, and we're going to bunt him over. And, of course, it doesn't work. They throw him out at second base. I mean, it's just that's ridiculous. I can't stand that type of stuff. Don't understand why your best defensive lineup isn't in there trying to protect a 1-run lead against the league's best offense in that spot. And there's plenty of other instances where I've felt as if David Ross has made decisions that I don't personally agree with, and a lot of Cubs fans on social media don't agree with either. But yeah, it's. I think there's something to be said there. I'm not saying. Hey, listen, like we talked about yesterday, I think regardless of whether the Cubs make the playoffs, this was a successful year for them. There's no question about it. But when you look at this collapse that they've had the last 3 weeks, I mean, you got to start pointing at some things and digging into that. Why are you collapsing? Well, you have a 4-game lead with 3 weeks left in September. What is the root cause of this? And obviously a lot of it is player performance, but a lot of it also when you have the run differential this high, if you're going to have the fifth highest run differential ever to miss the playoffs, then there's something there that I would like to evaluate. And I know funnily enough, I was reading some comments that Jed Hoyer made on 670 The Score up in Chicago, where he was asked about the bunting last night. And he's like, well, I hate bunts or something along those lines. He's like, I very rarely agree with bunting. But then he went on to give like a political answer, but clearly he wasn't pleased with it. So we'll see what happens on that front.
Hmm. Well, that's good to know. I on the note of run differential, it is alarming to see when you – look at the teams around the Cubs that are battling for those wild card spots, like Arizona, now 1 game up on the Cubs and in a pretty good position. Nothing is secured yet, especially they have a home series against Houston to close things out. But they're -7 run differential. Miami, who's now a half game behind the Cubs, -51 run differential. The Reds, -44. Like you said, Cubs +100. I mean, the Cubs run differential is even better than the Phillies.
And that's
already secured.
Yeah, that's one of the things, though, that I think, and I know he's gotten a lot of praise around the league, like Skip Schumacher with the Marlins in his first year as manager. Like, when you've got a team that's not a very good offense, that's a team that has played in all these tight, their one-run game record is ridiculous. They're like 30-12 in one-run games. I think a lot of that has to do with the manager pushing the right buttons and putting the right pieces out there, making the right late game decisions. I think there's a lot that has to do with that. When you talk about overperforming and underperforming certain metrics like that, I feel like there is some blame to be placed there. And as a Cubs fan who's watched quite a few Cubs games this year, I think that I've seen that with my eyes, and I've seen that with the fact that this team may not make the playoffs with that high of a run differential. So that's all I'm saying. I'm not calling for anyone's job. I'm just saying I'm frustrated.
I'm glad you'll allow me to contribute in the sorrows here by you mentioning that's a great stat as far as Skip Schumacher in terms of close games. And oh, if the Cardinals could only maybe, you know, hired him as a manager when for no reason, really, firing Mike Schilt because, hey, Jeff Albert should go. No, he shouldn't. Actually, you should go. Okay, cool. And we'll hire Ollie Marmol, who has no experience, and then we're going to stay loyal to him for absolutely no reason. But, yeah, Skip is actually killing it down in Miami, and they're going to play two. They get postponed last night against the Mets, play two today to see where that shakes out as far as having an opportunity to get right in front of the Cubs potentially, especially if the Cubs will drop another in Atlanta. Arizona wins last night as well. I know Wade asked, did the Cardinals help the Cubs cause last night by beating Milwaukee and St. Louis? Actually, no, because
that doesn't matter at all anymore.
The Brewers' magic number to win the division was 1, and with the Cubs losing, that was the one that they needed.
Now, hey, theoretically, if the Cubs hadn't choked last night and the Cardinals swept the Brewers, the Cubs swept the Braves, and then the Cubs went and swept Milwaukee, the Cubs win the division.
Wow.
Odds of that happening were about 0.00001% to start. So, yeah. Thanks, Cardinals, but also it didn't really do much.
Yeah, and I guess you could have argued that, hey, if the Cardinals would have swept the Brewers and the Cubs wouldn't have lost in Atlanta, then Milwaukee would have every reason to throw their guns at the Cubs, which they're like we talked about yesterday, they're already currently slotted, and we'll see if that changes here in the coming days when they have Woodruff, then Peralta to go in those first two games of that series. We'll see if them clinching the division really have nothing else to play for in terms of they can't move up a seed or anything like that in terms of their positioning, that they alter that, or we'll see how that ultimately goes. But you mentioned odds of things happening. I looked on DraftKings today. I wasn't looking at anything else. You know, I wanted to do some research for the show. The Chicago Cubs to make the playoffs, they are yes or no. Yes is plus money. No is -160. If you're not into betting, here's the implied odds. That essentially means, based on the way that is handicapped, the Cubs in their mind have about a 38% chance of making the playoffs.
In my head, it's lower than that.
Yeah.
I've accepted the fact that they're in a – I mean, they had to have that last night, even with a win last night, they still have an uphill climb with the Marlins schedule and the fact that they still get two more games against the Braves, the Brewers this weekend. You lose like that, and in the manner you lose, like, that's a mental thing too. Like, when that type of devastating loss happens like that, like, I wouldn't expect Seiya Suzuki's going to hit like he has the last 2 months. I mean, there's some mental aspect there, and there's just a mojo thing where it's like, I mean, to lose in that embarrassing fashion where you're getting made fun of all over the place and all over the sports world the day after. Like, it's just, for me, it seems like a tough ass to have that team regroup against two of the best teams in the league the next 5 days. So I'm not expecting much after last night. Last night was kind of the nail in the coffin and in my mind. And if they surprise, then I'll be happy about it, but I'm not expecting it.
Seattle got a win that they needed last night, beating the Astros. Now they're only a half game out of the AL wildcard race. The Astros having that half game lead up on the Mariners, and then the Blue Jays, who did lose, so there's a little bit more of an opportunity for some things to shuffle in that, although Houston was the closest on their heels in terms of jumping in that pecking order. But as it stands right now in the AL, you've got Tampa solidified with the wildcard spot. The Blue Jays a game and a half above the cut line, Houston right at the cut line, and then Seattle a half game behind them with one more game there in Seattle in that series. And oh, by the way, the Angels beat Texas last night, so that opens things up as far as that division still goes as well. So a lot still in the works and is fluid, and we'll see if the Cubs can change the narrative at all tonight and get one they absolutely need. And yeah, I know it's not the pitcher you'd love to be having.
Good news is Pete Alonso hits a 2-run homer and the Mets take a 2-0 lead over the Marlins.
Hey, there you go. There you go. I will tell you, in good news, I have no idea who the Braves pitcher is tonight.
I don't either.
I saw his name. I don't know. I have no idea who he is. And have they named a starter for tomorrow?
I don't know if they have. But again, and it's like I said yesterday, it's one thing. And the Cubs put up 6 runs last night, which in most situations should be enough to win. Now, they didn't add on late at all, which is when they had chances to, which is just kind of the story of how they've been going. But I'm not really concerned about who's pitching for the Braves. I'm concerned about getting 27 outs against their lineup. And as we saw last night, they got 15 of them and then collapsed and gave up 7. It's just it's relentless. I mean, and I will be completely honest with you, and I'm not lying when I say this. When the Cubs are up 6-0 in the sixth, I had no confidence. I mean, I was not comfortable at all. In almost any other 6-0 game in the sixth inning, I'd be comfortable. Like, all right, we got this one. I was not comfortable watching Justin Steele come back out for the sixth, up 6-0. And that's really the story of what this series is.
Mm. I do want to ask you, I know it's hard to maybe to pivot to the Braves side of this thing, but can we talk about, not that it They're hasn't been incredible. Talked about throughout the year, but especially the year that Acuna's having.
I know. I mean, and the pitch he homered last night too, like, it wasn't even a bad pitch by Assad. He's just unbelievable.
Has he gotten 70 stolen bases yet? I know he was in the mix for 40-70, which I don't know. Has that been done before?
I think he'd be the first, and I think he's a couple stolen bases away from 70. If I'm not mistaken, I think he still needs to get there. He's gotten to the 40 homers. I think he's at 42 now. The stolen bases,
he's hitting 335, 41 home runs, 103 ribbies.
68 stolen bases. So two more over 5 games. I think he's going to do it. He might do it tonight.
Man, that's one of the best seasons that I would have ever witnessed. I know, like, Aaron Judge last year was unbelievable. Otani's had some great seasons. I mean, if you go back in my lifetime, like Barry Bonds, it's, I know when you look at the OPS, the on base, like all the home runs, obviously. But the standards, usually you talk about, oh man, a 30-30 season's pretty darn special or rare. 40-70 is just inconceivable.
Yeah, I mean, that is great. It's unbelievable. He's been just incredible, like the consistency that he's had all year. I mean, since April, he's been playing like this. Like, he hasn't gone cold at all. He's been doing this all year long, and it is, yeah, you can see it. Like, every time he steps up, and he's the leadoff guy too, so you got to go through him right away. And every time he steps up, I was terrified of him every time he stepped up. And once he gets on base, he's on second. You know, it's a single's a double for him. A walk's a double for him. Maybe a triple because he's going to steal a bag. It's crazy.
Unbelievable. We did have a text come in. Huge lifelong Cubs fan, 60 years here. Ross and even Madden, great guys the players liked, but they've won despite those two managers' horrible handlings of the pitching staffs.
I pretty much completely agree with that. I think Ross is very well liked in the clubhouse. I think players enjoy playing for him, which is absolutely a factor that I don't ignore. I think he is not very good at in-game decision making at all. That's my stance on him.
Because this has been a pleasant surprise, and as time goes on, let's say the Cubs do fall short, Ross will probably get another season because they
don't think they're going to move on from him at all.
Yeah, there was no expectation of probably no expectation of actually being in the mix like this. Like this is an overachieving year regardless.
Yeah, no, I'd be stunned if they moved on from him. I would do it personally, just as somebody who has watched games that I feel like he's cost them down the stretch here, but I don't think there's any way. I think he has a great relationship with Jed Hoyer, although his comments today did raise an eyebrow about how he basically came out and said, I hated watching him bunt last night. But I don't think there's any risk of him losing a job after, like you said. Like, at the end of the day, it's still an overachievement, although I do think, I think in my eyes, I you look at that run differential and you look at some of these games that they've lost, and absolutely they've overachieved based on preseason expectations. I feel like they kind of have underachieved based on the performance they have gotten. Like, when you get this version of Cody Bellinger, when you get a Cy Young candidate in Justin Steele, when you get the bullpen who pitched as great as they did for like three straight months, when you get, you bring in Dansby Swanson, you get the performances you're getting from Masaya Suzuki. Like, there's almost a part of me that's like, how are you not in the playoffs?
Right.
With some of these. So I think there's I would push back a little bit on everyone saying, well, how could you ever criticize anybody because the Cubs weren't even supposed to be here? Well, I think at this point they probably should be in the postseason, and if they don't, then I think there's a part of me that's like, yeah, grand scheme of things, overachieving, but in the micro, I think they kind of underachieved a little bit, because I think with what they did get from their individual players this year, that should be a team that makes an expanded playoffs in the National League. Should be a better baseball team than the Miami Marlins. I'll put it at that.
Right, right. Man, I know we got to catch a break here. If you guys fired David Ross, I would be sitting here feeling so left out. Like, the fact that the White Sox just completely cleaned house. Now, yes, they did promote from within, which drove White Sox fans just absolutely bats, but then I was gonna say something different, but I had to stop at bat. Then also, Boston Red Sox, they fired their president of baseball, or whatnot, underachieving, under 500 team. If the Cubs looked at Ross and said, yeah, that's not good enough, like, and the Cardinals be like, yeah, let's run it back.
I can't believe that the Cardinals are running it back with Marmol. Personally, I cannot believe that.
It's dumb.
You think you start with that. Obviously, I think there's much
greater issues than that. I thought he was going to be fired at the beginning
of May. Issues than that, but at the very least, you got to change something.
Crazy. If you want to weigh in, you can. 217-359-2255. Going to talk some Illini football as we preview Purdue. We're going to have Mick Walker on from the Purdue 24/7 site. That's going to come up in about 15 minutes. We'll get the lowdown on what Ryan Walters and company are looking like going into this matchup, and what are some keys for this game in terms of how it's viewed over there in West Lafayette. We'll hear from some coordinators. We didn't play that yesterday, so Barry Lunny Jr. and also Aaron Henry, and Ryan Walters spoke to the media this week as well. I think it's just going to be interesting. Number one, it's a rivalry game. There's been a lot said in the offseason between Brett Bielema and Ryan Walters, and we've looked forward to this one for a long time. So I was interested, and I appreciate Kyle cutting that up, to just get the perspective of what Ryan said to the media today about that matchup. So we'll get you all of that as we go along. There was also big news in the NBA that we can talk about. Maybe we'll do that on the other side of this break before we get to Mick coming up at 3:45. Dame Lillard on the move, finally.
And not to who we thought.
As recent as yesterday, according to reports. So we'll fill you in on that when we return. Stick with us. This is The Drive.
The hammering, the sawing, the drilling, all the sounds of the workplace are music to our ears. You can be a part of construction projects, large and small, as a Carpenters Local 243 member. Learn to excel with apprentice and journeyman training. Members enjoy all the benefits this internationally recognized union has to offer. It's a life-changing decision. Join the Local 243 family tradition. Contact Carpenters Local 243 at 217-356-5463.
From computer systems to brakes and tires too, at PDR, fixing cars is what they do. Remember, when you turn the key and the car won't run, call 367-9481 or use their dedicated text-only line at 383-0619. Additional information, including repair quotes and online scheduling requests, available from the website at pdrauto.com. Remember, they are what's best for your truck or car. They are PDR.
A tradition of excellence over 150 years in the making. At Busey Bank, we're committed to building relationships that span generations. Wherever your journey in life leads you, we are with you along the way, creating a legacy for you and your family. Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868, proud to be the official bank of the Fighting Illini. Member FDIC.
Welcome to Sarah Champagne, where your dream car awaits. With an exquisite selection of top-tier vehicles, impeccable service, and unbeatable prices, they are your ultimate destination for automotive excellence. Experience luxury, performance, and style like never before. Visit today and drive home in the vehicle you've always desired. Sarah Champagne, Honda, BMW, Subaru, GMC, and Buick. Your journey towards automotive perfection starts here. Visit them at Sarah, S-E-R-R-A, Champagne.com.
Hey, where are you headed?
To Kelsey Furniture in Tuscola.
What do they have there?
What don't they have there? Living room furniture, benches, chests, love seats, sectionals, tables, bedroom sets, hutches, nightstands, end tables, cabinets, mirrors, stools, clocks, lamps, pillows, rugs, desks, media consoles, patio furniture, Tempur-Pedic mattresses, and more.
So, everything.
Yeah, probably could have just said that.
Kelsey Furniture, quality for less. Hi, it's Stevie J. Sit back and relax and take the drive with Lante and Derek Piper. Weekdays 4 to 6 right here on ESPN Radio 93.5.
Back on the drive at Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Derek Piper, Kyle Tosk. Let's talk some hoops for a little bit. Damian Lillard, all-star point guard. Wonder where he would ultimately end up if it would spill over into the season. Demanded the trade in the offseason from Portland. At a time, it seemed like Miami was really the only situation that made sense. Only team that made an official offer, I believe.
It's the only team he said he wanted to play for.
That's true. That as well. Portland holds steady, decides they're going to wait. And then, I think it was yesterday, was it Woj that announced it? Or somebody reported yesterday that the Toronto Raptors were the favorite now to land Damian Lillard. And then it pops today. No, actually, it's the Milwaukee Bucks. Milwaukee Bucks acquiring Damian Lillard, pairing him with Giannis, with Chris Middleton and company. Drew Holiday's on the move from Milwaukee to Portland. It's a three-team deal. Phoenix is involved as well. DeAndre Ayton is going to Portland too. So Portland gets a decent haul back in terms of, like, in comparison. I think the Miami deal, wasn't it, Kyle? You might have to correct me or try to look this thing up if it's out there. But, like, Tyler Hero was thought to be maybe the big piece in that.
Yep.
In that deal. And there was another throw in. I couldn't remember exactly what they were said to be offering in that one. But instead, to get Drew Holiday, who was, that's a tough loss for Milwaukee in terms of his defense in the backcourt. And then Ayton's a guy that Phoenix has been trying to pivot off of, and Ayton's kind of been trying to get out of there too. So those are two nice players, and it really is more going to be a long-term build, obviously, there in Portland as they got some young guys and had a high draft pick this year. So unfortunately, the Dame situation – in Portland, he wasn't able to win at a high enough level, and they weren't able to surround him with enough. I mean, he got to one Western Conference Finals, but now he wants to go win somewhere. And Milwaukee, I think, just in terms of I'm a casual NBA guy. I'm not an NBA buff by any means. We'll have to get Matt Cilic on at some point to get his full breakdown and what it means in the East. But I would say that from a casual NBA fan, Milwaukee's a very likable team to me. And I just appreciate the fact that the Bucks are doing everything they can to keep Giannis happy. And yes, they won a title, so they've already had a reason to be like, hey, instead of you being like LeBron leaving Cleveland or KD leaving OKC or all these other superstars in the NBA just get unhappy and say, I'm out, I want to go somewhere that's built to win. They were able to get him a championship, and then they gave him one of the best point guards in the league now to say, hey, let's go win another one.
Yeah, I did just pull this up. Apparently, the reported Heat offer, according to one of the a beat reporter for the Miami Herald, said it was basically centered around Tyler Hero, 2028 and 2030 first-round picks, and then unloading a contract to make the money work, whether that was Kyle Lowry or Duncan Robinson. That's not
anything.
No, it's nothing.
And it's weird to see. I mean, the fact that a lot of these picks that get dealt are years and years in advance, it's so hard to know where in the heck those are going to be.
I've always found it interesting that the NBA has that rule where you can't trade consecutive first rounders, and which I think always complicates these trades because you see it and it's like, well, if you've traded your first round pick, well, now our first pick that we can trade is in 2026, and we can only do pick swaps in 2025 and 2027, or we'll just throw you 6 years in advance worth of picks so that there's no protections or swaps on them. It's just it's a weird system. It's like the NBA's kind of discouraging teams from trading draft picks, which I think is probably not the way you want to go about it. But I in terms of my reaction to him going to Milwaukee, I think it's pretty scary stuff. I mean, I know I think Jrue Holiday was kind of the perfect fit there. I think that his defensive ability, that's not going to be lost on them. But this is Damian Lillard. I mean, a Damian Lillard, Giannis Antetokounmpo pairing with Chris Middleton sitting in a corner, spotting up to shoot it as well. That's the Eastern Conference favorite. That's maybe the league favorite. That's a really scary basketball team. And yeah, I think I know that Jrue Holiday was important. He was an all-star last year. He's one of the better defensive guards in the league. Good playmaker, but just not quite the same caliber of player as a Damian Lillard. Doesn't quite scare you as a defense as much as Damian Lillard does. I think that's going to be a nightmare to try to defend that team now. And I'd be shocked if the Milwaukee Bucks don't come out of the Eastern Conference if those guys stay healthy.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think – you think Dame's a little nervous about, you know, being in the same division as the Bulls? How many times they're going to have to see Chicago?
He's been real scared of the Bulls the last couple of years when he hit a buzzer beater on them 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
He had 50-something on them this past year, if I'm not mistaken.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I think he actually, when his first reaction to the deal wasn't, oh, let's go, I get to play with Giannis. It's, let's go, I get to play the Bulls four times a year now.
That's fair. It was a couple weeks ago that someone threw out there into the Twitterverse that the Bulls were a sleeper team on Damian Lillard.
They're a sleeper team on nobody. They're going to run it back with the same team.
It's sad because you think, like, big market, I know maybe some of the Jordan mystique probably doesn't play anymore in terms of like current free agents and or guys trying to go into that situation, but they haven't been a destination spot in forever. I know the Knicks are kind of in the same. They did get Jalen Brunson. They hired his dad to be on the staff, and Jalen Brunson was a really good player this past year. But
that's not the superstar caliber player that we're talking about. That New York and Chicago should be.
You'd think that they would
attracting.
Be attracting. Yeah. Yeah.
It is. It's frustrating. Like, yeah, don't get me wrong. DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine are star-level NBA players, but they're not that superstar, league-changing talent that I feel like the Chicago Bulls should have more success. It goes back to when they were courting LeBron and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade, and they were close to coming to the Bulls, but then a Luol Deng trade held it up, I think, is what the story comes back to, and they go to the Heat. And, you know, Bulls were in on Carmelo Anthony at one point and didn't get him.
They're trying to trade for Kobe Bryant
For Kobe at one point, didn't get him. Obviously, you draft a superstar caliber player in Derrick Rose, and that wasn't their fault. But it's just, since Jordan, the Bulls haven't been the spot where superstars are headed. And it's frustrating because you see all these other just league-changing talents around the league. And you look at it and you say, I'd like to watch one of those play for my team. That'd be fun.
Now, the Bulls did get in trouble for tampering with, albeit Lonzo Ball, or who is not barely played for the Bulls. They lost a draft pick in that. Miami's claiming tampering on this Damian Lillard thing. Like, Jimmy Butler goes on Twitter, records a video. It's kind of funny, just kind of the contradiction. He's like, you didn't hear it from me, says the guy who's recording a video and telling everybody and puts it on Twitter that there's tampering going on. NBA look into Milwaukee. And then Tyler Hero says, yeah, what he said, which was also funny because Tyler Hero, you're like advocating for, hey, we should have been the ones to make that trade. I wanted to go to Portland.
I know.
Like, what?
Yeah, the awareness on that one from him is not high. but yeah, I think it's a situation where the Heat realize, oh boy, not only did we not get the guy that we've pretty much spent our whole offseason trying to get and make ourselves a championship contender, we also lost two backcourt pieces this offseason in Gabe Vincent and Max Strus. And this is a team that's gotten worse since being the 8 seed squeaking into the playoffs by beating the Chicago Bulls of all teams in a play-in game. Now, they got to the finals. I'm not taking anything away from that. But this is an 8 seed that got worse. So the Heat, I mean, it's a where do they go from here now? Because they're, I mean, it seems like their entire plan this offseason was Damian Lillard or Bradley Beal's going to be on the Heat. They decided they didn't want to get Bradley Beal because they wanted Damian Lillard instead. Bucks take him from them. Jimmy Butler's not getting his help. I understand why he's trying to create an investigation here because he was supposed to finally get his help there in Miami.
Yeah. Maybe they can trade for DeMar DeRozan or something.
Oh, gosh.
Who knows?
Who's getting sent to the Bulls in that trade? Tyler Hero?
Yeah, Tyler Hero. Hey, he wants to move. He wants to move out of Miami for some reason. I did find this interesting. I want to play this before we get to a break and then get to Mick Walker from Purdue's 24/7 side to fill us in on Illinois and Purdue coming up on Saturday. But interestingly enough, this is circulating on Twitter now. For the All-Star game, if you're not familiar, a lot of people don't watch the All-Star game, but they have two captains, last year LeBron and Giannis, and they do a draft. Giannis got the first pick. It's interesting that in hindsight who he selected. So let's play that real quick.
My first pick. Yeah. What'd you say, LeBron?
I already know his first pick.
That's sort of why. My first pick gonna be Damian Lillard.
I
would never pick you to even be a broadcast.
Lasers 31 a night, and he's the first pick. Look, that surprised me too. No, you're not gonna do him dirty here, are you? No, you're not.
See, Giannis has changed this weekend.
I think so too.
You know, he always talk about loyalty, being loyal.
I know who my team is.
All that stuff, right? So I knew for sure his first pick was going to be Drew. So I don't know what's going on with Giannis. Okay. You messed my whole draft board up now.
I'm here to win.
With my first.
There's your evidence. There's your evidence, Jimmy Butler. Interesting. I can't wait to watch them together. It's going to be a high-level duo, and Milwaukee's already been in the mix the last handful of years, and now Dame just takes them to another level, I would imagine. We got to catch a break. Let's talk some Illinois-Purdue football coming up on Saturday. Mick Walker from 24/7 Sports is going to join us on the Tapman's Towing phone line. Stay tuned for that. This is The Drive.
Hi, this is Kirk Lehman with Aftershock Decals and Design, and right now we are looking for an honest, hardworking individual that wants a career with Aftershock Decals and Design. If you have any kind of experience wrapping vehicles, tinting windows, we want you.
You can't touch this.
No, not that kind of wrapper.
You can't touch this.
Please go to our website at AftershockDD.com, click on the Jobs tab, and send in your resume. We want you. AftershockDD.com.
A biker, a Baptist minister, a Catholic priest, a veteran, and a farmer walk into a trucking company. Sounds like the beginning of a bad joke, doesn't it? Well, it's not. It's the diversification of the driver force at Gale Ferrix Trucking. At GFT, we welcome all qualified Class A CDL holders. So if you have 2 years of experience or less with military service, a clean driving record, and a positive work ethic, we want you to fill one of our 3 open regional van positions today. You will have every weekend at home and earn the money to enjoy it with our $1,200 weekly gross pay guarantee, in addition to all the other great advantages GFT offers. During the month of September, we are paying a $4,000 sign-on bonus to experienced drivers that want to work for a company that works as hard for them as they work for us. Call 765-793-7131 or email timo@gftlog.com. 765-793-7131 or email timo@gftlog.com.
Hey, Illini fans, it's Mike Greenberg. Catch Lon Tay and Derek Piper weekdays from 4 to 6 right here on ESPN Radio 93.5.
Back on the drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5, Derek Piper, Kyle Tosk. Let's get to the Tapman's Towing phone line. Bring on Mick Walker from Boiler Sports Report, covering the Purdue Boilermakers for 24/7 Sports Network. Mick, thanks for joining us. How are you doing today?
Good, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing great. This has been a game, Mick, that probably both fan bases, since the Twitter war that went on in the offseason between Brett Bielema and Ryan Walters, have had circled, and I know that Purdue probably not sitting in a spot that they would envision, and Illinois has not played great football through 4 weeks as well, but this seems like a big one. What are the vibes like over in West Lafayette going into this football game where both sides really feel like they want to win it?
I think a lot of people still have faith in Ryan Walters long term, but I do think there's some general disappointment from the fan base this season, seeing how the defense has looked through 4 weeks, knowing that Ryan Walters was such a successful defensive coordinator, that Kevin Kane, who he brought over from Illinois to be his defensive coordinator, was not only on that staff, but has coordinated defensive for FMU. Knowing those facts, I think there's just a disappointment in how the defense has looked, because you thought maybe, hey, the offense might take a minute. You got a transfer quarterback in Hudson Card. You got some things that you're still trying to work through in an unexperienced offensive line, but you at least hope you could hang your hat on the defense. And I think knowing that that has not been the case, it left some fans with disappointment. But on the flip side, the offense has looked pretty good with Hudson Card. So I think it's a mixed bag, but overall I think people are still pretty high on the future of Ryan Walters.
Hudson Card can obviously present some challenges with the way that he's able to air it out, and got some – it seems each and every year Purdue finds a way to have another explosive receiver, and they definitely got one this year as well. Just what has worked so far in Graham Harrell's offense, and what's really kind of the makeup of that attack that Illinois is going to have to try to prevent?
Yeah, I think obviously Hudson, he didn't play a ton at Texas, but he did play a fair amount, enough that you have kind of a baseline of what you knew he was going to be. I think he lived up to completely what the coaching staff would have expected him to be, knowing that. I think they also have a pretty talented group of wide receivers. When you look at Deion Burks, who's one of the better wide receivers statistically in the Big Ten, he's a big play guy. He's able to win down the field. He's able to separate. Ryan Walters said he's probably the best athlete on the team, pound for pound. And then you have TJ Sheffield, who's been good for him for a while. And then Adir Rahim Yassin has been also steady a pass catcher this season after kind of being hampered with injuries in the past. And then tight end Max Clair is another guy that you look at and you just know that he's going to be able to come up with a few big catches a game. So knowing that they have that talent around them and knowing what Hudson Card has been, I think he's lived up to everything. And I think just the combination of it all has allowed them to have a pretty steady and consistent offense.
Mick, I was watching that game last Friday against Wisconsin, and obviously the Badgers pretty much were able to do whatever they wanted offensively. Purdue made it interesting in that third quarter, and that kind of really showed you what this offense is capable of. It seems like they've shot themselves in the foot a lot between that Syracuse game with the fumbles. I think Hudson Card might have had three that he lost in that one, threw a couple picks against Wisconsin. Is it just a matter of they just can't get out of their own way enough to win football games enough?
Yeah, I think penalties, mistakes, turnovers just have limited them being able to capitalize on all the progress and the success they've had. I think they are a good offensive team, but they are not nearly as consistent as I think this coaching staff and even the fan base would like them to be, which is, I imagine, disappointing to really everybody that's watching them. But I think, like you said, there's the flashes there. It's just that whether it's a fumble here or a turnover there, you get down in the end zone, not only the turnovers, but just struggling to convert on third and one, fourth and one, in your own, whether it's in your own end or deep in the enemy's territory. There's just been a lot of things about this team so far that have kind of been just, you like what you see, but then the ending has just kind of left a bad taste in your mouth and left a little bit to be desired.
Mick Walker is our guest, BoilersportsReport.com. You can follow him on Twitter at MickWalker247. I do want to focus on that defense. Do you think it's a matter of just not having enough talent in year one for Ryan Walters? I know if you look back at his first year at Illinois, the first half of the season versus the back half of the season was really night and day. He was able to flip a switch and get them to play a lot better football. So do you think that could be still in the cards for this Purdue team, or is it a matter of probably going to take a little bit in terms of filling in the pieces with more talent?
Yeah, honestly, I think a lot of them, honestly, maybe 10 to 9 players on the defense have played well. Different spots have played well consistently every week. I think the two biggest spots you look at is only having one linebacker on the field in this formation. I know that's something that's caused Illinois some problems throughout this season. Just when it comes to that one linebacker, you can get washed up pretty often, or they can have problems trying to fit runs. So that's caused problems. I think it's what really allowed Garrett Schrader to run wild as a quarterback. It's what allowed Tanner Mordecai to also run wild for Wisconsin to an extent. And then the other thing has been they brought back a really talented safety in Cam Allen, who is a great safety at reading the field, kind of sitting in zones and reading the quarterback's eyes. But he's kind of been asked to be a cover safety, kind of a nickel corner, a cover safety, and he has struggled with that. He's just not a guy that plays well in man. So if you look at the Fresno State game, or if you look at even the Virginia Tech game in the first half after the delay, they struggle to cover slot receivers, and obviously that presents a big challenge when you got a guy like Isaiah Williams coming in.
On that note, Mick, what else about this matchup stands out to you in terms of what could swing one way or another based on maybe an X factor or a couple of things that really stand out between these two teams?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing when I look at it is has to be Keith Randolph and Johnny Newton. I don't know if these interior offensive linemen are going to be able to keep up with those guys consistently. I think it's good that they got Gus Hartwig back at center. That's a big help for him, obviously. But when you look at guys like Johnny Newton and Keith Randolph, those are NFL guys. Those aren't just Big Ten guys. I think that's something that's going to be tough for this Purdue defense or for this Purdue offense to manage, and that could impact their running game and the success they've had doing that. Defensively, I think the biggest thing is, like I said, Isaiah Williams. He's a guy that obviously is one of the better wide receivers in the Big Ten. You could probably make the case he's the best wide receiver in the Big Ten West. And when you have a guy like that plays primarily in the slot, and you have a bat and you have an issue covering slot wide receivers, it could be a bad day for that Purdue defense knowing that guy's out there.
Mick, I know sometimes with rivalries, they can be more for the fans in certain cases. Obviously, Ryan and Corey Patterson, Kevin Kane, guys that were on the other side. And I don't think that from my outside view of it, and you could answer this as well, it doesn't seem to be any real animosity towards Brett Bielema and company. They seem very appreciative of their time there and Ryan's ability to be showcased and then get this opportunity. But how much emotion do you think is around this particular game and what this win would mean, just beyond a sign of progress and one that, you know, both teams could really use? But do you think there's extra juice to it because it is Illinois and Purdue?
I do. Obviously, like you said there, just naturally, just it being a football game and knowing where these two teams are at in the season, there's going to be some juice. Because essentially, really, it's hard to see a path for either one of these teams that if they lose, you get the bowl eligibility, especially with Purdue with their schedule seeing Ohio State and Michigan on it. But when it comes to just the animosity or just different feelings about the coaching staff, I think there's a lot of mutual respect, obviously, but I think there's also a feeling of, hey, it's great to work with Brett Bielema. It's not necessarily now that they're moved on, it's not necessarily we need to take it easy on them. They obviously want to win. They want to beat their former boss. So I think that adds a little extra juice, but that's adding juice for the coaches. Does it add juice for the players? I don't know. I still just think that there's going to be a natural kind of excitement for this game, knowing that I think the players will buy in, knowing what the coaches have kind of gone through and where they're from, knowing that this is a game that means a lot in the Big Ten West and means a lot for the season. Gus Hartwig kind of talked about it yesterday at his media availability. There's a big difference at this point in the season, looking at 2-3 and 1-4. I think knowing that's really big for Purdue.
Mick, one more for you. As we project out forward, it's already right off the bat, Ryan Walters making that move. They locked horns with Illinois on the recruiting side, Hudson Card, Illinois, and Purdue both involved with him. Purdue wins that one. They also had another the name is escaping me now. I think was it a safety out of Chicago? Someone up there that Purdue was able to covet and win in that one as well. What have you seen in terms of when Purdue and Illinois have gone up against each other, and how much do you think that will happen going into the future?
Yeah, I mean, the guy you mentioned there is Luke Williams out of Naperville North, and he'll actually be in the stadium this week. His brother walked on to Purdue after he committed, or shortly before he committed. But he'll be in the stadium, and I think you'll see it. I think there was some discussion from this Purdue coaching staff when they initially got on it, but why did this old coaching staff, or why does Purdue never really succeeded in recruiting Chicago just because of how close it is? I mean, for some people in Illinois, Purdue might be closer to Chicago than or some people in Chicago, Purdue might be closer than Champaign, just geographically for some drives. But, yeah, I think you look at that and you consider the fact that Purdue, obviously, to be able to win in the Big Ten West, you got to win in the Big Ten West recruiting footprint, and that is going to be coming out. Either it can come at the expense of their own success if they can't win them, or if it can come at the expense of Illinois if they're able to beat them, like they were with Luke Williams. I think that also adds a little bit to it because, like I said, Luke Williams will be there. Then there's two guys in the 2025 class that both have Illinois and Purdue offers that will be in the stadium just watching. So I think that's going to add an extra layer to it, really.
Good stuff. Mick Walker with 24/7 Sports, Boiler Sports Report. Follow him on Twitter at Mick Walker 24/7. Appreciate you taking the time. Appreciate the insights, and enjoy the game this Saturday.
Yep. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Mick Walker. Good stuff. Breaking down the Boilers, getting us up to speed on what they're going to be working with going into Saturday's game. A big one that, like he said, looking at Purdue's schedule after this, including this game and afterwards, you've got Purdue hosting Illinois. Then they're at Iowa, and then they bring in Ohio State. They lose this game, they're most likely 1-6.
Mm-hmm.
Illinois, on the flip side, the schedule isn't as tough, but I think that even if you take into context, okay, if Illinois loses this game, number one, I think the interest of the fan base, just the fact you wouldn't have beaten a Power 5 team yet, that would be a big weight on the shoulders of a squad that had high hopes going into the year. Yes, you get Nebraska after that. But maybe that environment on a Friday night isn't what you would hope for, just based on the disappointment. But after that is Maryland and then Wisconsin. And I don't think anybody that reasonably thinking about the rest of the season would say, oh, well, Illinois lost in blowout fashion to Kansas, blowout fashion to Penn State, lost on the road to Purdue, still has to play Maryland on the road, still has to play Wisconsin, still has to play Iowa on the road, that this team's going to maybe even make a bowl game. I think Mick is right in that, in terms of it's hard to see a path, especially for Purdue because of the schedule. But even Illinois could sit there and say, we don't win this one, it could be tough to make a bowl.
Absolutely. Yeah. I this is a massive game for Illinois' season. I think there's two ways it can go. I think Illinois can get the momentum they need. They can fix some things. They can beat a Power 5 team for the first time. They can beat a Big Ten West opponent, draw back to 500 in a wide open Big Ten West standings-wise. And, yeah, I just think a loss in this game against a Purdue team that, for all the, you know, frustrations we've had with the way Illinois has played and the defense hasn't played great, the offense has struggled, Purdue has been even worse so far. That's a team that's played even worse than you have. And so if you can't go out there and beat them, if Brett Bielema can't go out and beat the guy that he gave an opportunity to and pretty much allowed to be a head coach based on his 2 years in Champaign, we're going to reach some dire times here in terms of the way that you look at this season. And yeah, if Illinois can't go in there and beat Purdue on Saturday, I'm not going to be very confident that they can get to 6. And it's going to be a situation where week to week, I'm not going to have all that much confidence in this team and winning each week against in these toss up games. Cause this is, I would consider this a toss up game, but one that I would lean that you're probably the better football team. Yeah. So you got to go get this one. I know it's on the road, but it is huge.
We're going to talk more about that game going on throughout the rest of this week. I know we're not on Thursday, but we're going to get you some sound from the coordinators in this next hour. And then Friday, of course, we will be able to give our final thoughts on Illinois and Purdue. As we said, a massive game for both sides. We're due for a break. Come back. We'll play some Aaron Henry and also Barry Lunny Jr. audio and get you some Ryan Walters as well. Stick with us. This is The Drive.